Live and Lansing with Michael Cohen. This is More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Michael Cohen with producer Desi Simmons. Hey, send us some feedback. Our email address, capitalcityrecap@gmail.com. Now, there are times that many of us may need help for emotional or mental issues, and that's when we turn to psychiatrists and psychologists to guide us to a better place. But the question is, which one should we turn to, and how do you know when you found a good match? To talk about that, I'm joined by Dr. Stephanie Mulani, a psychiatrist with over 30 years of experience and the author of the new book, Give and Take, A Roadmap to Understanding a Psychiatrist. Stephanie, welcome to the program.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
I guess the first question is, when it comes to choosing between a psychiatrist and a psychologist, is there a reason to go in one direction or the other than the fact that a psychiatrist, I know, is able to prescribe medication?
Well, that is the essential difference. I think it's a matter of circumstance in one's life that's causing discomfort, then I think it's a personal choice. And if someone is more comfortable talking with a psychologist or a licensed mental health professional or a social worker, then you know, it really is quite fine. And that one of those professionals will often refer to a psychiatrist if they feel the person might be in need of medical treatment.
Would it be fair to say that the vast majority of mental health issues nowadays are dealt with medication?
Well, of course, for psychiatrists in this day and age, the majority, I would say, limit their practices to medication management simply because third-party payers have restricted reimbursement for that service for MDs. So out of necessity, we've ended up focusing on the medical management issues. However, in my book, I do mention that I'm getting older and I trained 40 years ago. At that time, we were trained by psychoanalysts, and I tell the students and the residents that I've supervised, I have a foot on each side of history, or each side of the fence, so to speak, and of course, they take for granted what we have to work with today. It really wasn't all that long ago that we had very little to work with, and it has made a great impact on me watching people respond so well to effective treatment with medications. Often we hear in the news that maybe medication has been used inappropriately or excessively or not managed well, which is more often the case. And so medications get a bad reputation. But if they're used well, it's very much like my doctor who treated me when I was a child, who had trained while there was no penicillin, and he had seen illnesses that were horrible. And now he had penicillin. He was so excited, and I guess I'm a bit that way.
I do have some more questions about medication, but let's turn to the real question, which is understanding a psychiatrist. Are there any clear indications that a psychiatrist may not be very good, or rather that he or she may not be a good fit for a patient?
Well, yes, I do think I have observed that in my career, unfortunately. Not everyone, and that could be true of me too. I've often, when I worked at the VA, I've said to my administration that I hope if a patient says they don't want to see me, that they would be allowed to meet with somebody else, because I might remind them of their Aunt Sally that they really had a bad time with, and they need that freedom. But on the other hand, if a psychiatrist seems preoccupied, not listening, doesn't seem to hear what the patient is saying, or they seem insensitive, or they're judgmental or shaming, which I unfortunately have seen once, then by all means, the person should definitely get another opinion or at least have another assessment so they can make the decision about who they think they work with best.
It seems like it might take a little time to really get a sense of if a psychiatrist is not the right one. Are there any questions a patient might want to ask at an initial meeting with a psychiatrist?
Well, I give patients a lot of credit. Children have a pretty good sense of things generally. You can't fool them very, very long. And I think people who come in should trust themselves because they have good horse sense about, they may not know some of the technical information and be at the mercy of the clinician. But on the other hand, I think they really get a sense pretty quickly if they're being served well or not. At least that's been my experience, both as a patient, I might add, as well as a clinician.
I'm talking to Dr. Stephanie Mulani, a psychiatrist with over 30 years of experience, and her new book is Give and Take, A Roadmap to Understanding a Psychiatrist. How often, Stephanie, does a psychiatrist acknowledge right away that, you know what, I don't think this is going to work, I don't think we're a good match, I think you should go to another doctor, let me refer you to someone? Is that a common practice?
Well, I don't know if it's common. I can't say that. It does happen. If someone comes in, for example, I worked part-time at the Veterans Hospital, and I would often refer to a psychologist who had done good current training in exposure therapy and had more experience with that. So I would refer them quite quickly. And there are other examples. Sometimes we refer to a couples therapist. So we do cross-refer quite frequently.
And how should a patient feel when they're sitting in front of the right person? Should they maybe feel challenged sometimes, or should they feel completely comfortable and at ease as though they're with a good friend?
Well, honestly, I think it has to do with what kind of treatment is being offered. In the earlier days, when we were doing psychoanalytically oriented therapy, people usually felt uncomfortable because you needed to focus on the things that cause their discomfort. However, if it's a medical management model, I think the patient should feel very comfortable. And if they're not, they need to let the psychiatrist know that, and they need to explore why they're not comfortable. And if the patient doesn't feel that that's being satisfactorily done, then they need to, as I say, look elsewhere.
I can imagine you have one psychiatrist that might be very pleasant and nice and somehow may allow a patient to continue down a pathway that's not very healthy versus one that will challenge them directly and say, you know what you're doing is wrong, you need to change this potentially. Is there that kind of a dichotomy there?
Yes. I think both situations can arise where the psychiatrist may not be particularly supportive when they need to be, but also, as you say, getting better hurts. I don't care if it's a surgeon, an internist, or a psychiatrist. You know, often we cause our patients a fair amount of discomfort in service of healing, unfortunately.
I see. So it's a little more complicated, perhaps. Now, I want to get back to medication because I've heard that antidepressants, anti-anxiety medicine, is not really meant for long-term basis use by many people. It should be used for a period of time, and maybe someone then should try to return to a life without medication, although it sure seems that nowadays people stick to these medications for many years, maybe a lifetime. Is that, in fact, what we're seeing happening?
Yes. When these medicines first came on the market in about 1986, the first serotonin uptake inhibitor came, we were told to use these medications for about 3 months. And then the longitudinal studies showed us that people had a high recidivism rate. So we were then advised to extend the period of time to 6 months. And now I encourage my patients for the first episode to take it for about a year because it optimizes their prognosis. So it's sort of like the early cell phone batteries. You had to discharge the battery completely before you recharged it, or there would be a set point, and the cell seems to behave that way. So if we don't, or wearing a cast on a leg, you need to wear it for a certain critical period of time in order for healing to occur, and that's what seems to be the case with antidepressants. There has been so much information, and I try to address this in my book, because we have learned that untreated depression is a higher risk factor for heart disease than hypertension and other factors.
Although is the reality that people then likely go on to maybe a lifetime of use of an antidepressant?
Yes. I personally, of course, we were all the familiar is always comfortable, and the unfamiliar is always scary. And I would take an antidepressant or combination if that was indicated, as it usually, more often is than not nowadays, I would take that more comfortably than I would, say, some of the rheumatology medicines that I've been offered, just simply because I've lived with these and watched people over 34 years, and I've never had a problem with the medicines. Now, I've had people have a side effect, and I've told them to stop it. That doesn't match your cell and your receptor. We'll try a different one. That happens quite frequently. But in terms of having some kind of damage, I have not seen a serious problem yet.
Psychiatrist Dr. Stephanie Mulaney. You can find her new book, Give and Take, A Roadmap to Understanding a Psychiatrist. You can find her online at stephaniemulaney.com. That's Stephanie, MULLANY.com. Dr. Mulaney, thank you very much for joining me.
Well, thank you very much for having me.